Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of my Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me back this week after being sick last week is Jasmine Smith. Jasmine, how are you feeling today?
I'm doing better.
That's good. That's good. Today on the podcast, we have Representative Reginald Meeks of the 42nd District, which is in Louisville. We've had his geographic neighbors, Charles Booker and Atticus Scott, on in the past couple weeks, so we figured we would get the 42nd involved as well. So that was a really good conversation. He has a different perspective than a lot of the other people we've talked to because he's a very long-term legislator. He's been in Frankfort since 2000. We talked to him about, you know, how things have changed, how he's changed, and it was a really good conversation. I was glad that we had it.
Yeah, we've had so many newbies.
Yeah,
we have a vet.
Before that, though, we have lots of other stuff to talk about. Jasmine is going to tell us about a small fight that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Democrat from New York, has had with a couple of our representatives here in Kentucky. She's interacted with them in interesting ways. Jasmine's also going to tell us a little bit about a different Beshear versus Bevin fight taking place in the courts. And I'm going to update us a little bit about the Brady Industries story, which is something that we've talked about at length before, but there's always more news. And there's been some big developments that have happened this week. And of course, we have some quick hits. So without any further ado, Jasmine, tell us what we need to know about our representatives and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Okay, so this isn't a brand new story, but it's kind of been developing. Mm-hmm. So a few weeks ago, Representative Andy Barr of the 6th District invited Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to come visit the coal mines in Kentucky. Representative Ocasio-Cortez has been spearheading the Green New Deal, which is legislation that would focus on the use of renewable energy, among lots of other things, mm-hmm. right? The Representative Barr invited her to Kentucky during a committee hearing, but then he sent her a real formal invitation.
What do you think that looked like? Do you think it was like calligraphy, or like was it on like parchment paper? What does a formal invitation even mean?
It's probably on his House of Representatives letterhead,
okay,
I guess.
Okay.
He sent it to her chief of staff, and she said that she'd be happy to come to Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Barr said that there are no parts of the Green New Deal that he supports and that it's a dramatic lurch towards socialism.
Dun, dun, dun.
But that he does believe it's important to talk with other legislators, see their perspective, show her his perspective, I guess, mm-hmm. is why he would want to bring her here. But then last week, you know, this nice invitation took a turn. Andy Barr said that AOC needed to apologize to Dan Crenshaw before she comes to Kentucky.
Wait, so what?
So he said that her comments towards Dan Crenshaw demonstrated a lack of civility. So basically, she called out Dan Crenshaw after he made comments targeting Representative Omar and her characterization of 9/11.
Okay, so all these characters are, okay, Dan Crenshaw is the Republican from Texas with an eye patch. I know that. And Representative Omar is from, and she's Ilhan Omar, and she's from Minnesota.
Yes.
And she's a Palestinian American. And that was like a whole thing that happened in the national news. And I guess Representative Crenshaw like kicked off this whole thing, and the president ended up like retweeting this. And this was like a big news story.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess Representative Ocasio-Cortez like basically was like, Dan Crenshaw, you shouldn't have done that. And Andy Barr said, you have to apologize before you can
come to Kentucky. And she also, she called him out for not voting for the 9/11 compensation fund as well.
Yeah.
And so Andy Barr is saying, this is a veteran who's served his country, who's fought against terrorism. How dare you? You need to apologize if you want to come to Kentucky.
So it sounds like he was just freaked out that she said yes. Sounds more
maybe.
That's what it sounds like to me. I don't know.
I didn't want to get too in the weeds with like all these comments back and forth because, you know, we're not a national politics show, but that's the gist of it, right?
Okay.
Her spokesman said, luckily, Kentucky has open borders. If we decided to go to Kentucky to visit with coal miners, which we certainly hope to, and talk about the opportunities that can be brought to the rural South and to coal mine country in Appalachia that can be brought by transitioning to renewable energy and the Green New Deal, we'll be excited to do so.
All right. Here's a thing that really annoys me about this entire situation, right? Representative Barr has done this at length. He makes everything about coal and coal miners, and he lives in the 6th District, and he's been doing this for years. There's no coal mines in the 6th District. They're all further east than that. Like, there's maybe a few, like, all the way out on the eastern edge of his district.
Yeah.
But, like, he's always talking about coal and always talking about coal miners when none of those people are actually his people in his district.
Yeah,
so
I think that's just what you're supposed to do if you're a legislator from Kentucky, I guess.
Yeah, maybe. Or at least like from the 6th district. Whatever. It's a signal, and he's been using it for a long time. So it's a little goofy, but yeah.
Yeah, so I enjoyed the comment that Kentucky has open borders. She can come if she wants to.
Yeah, that's right. We do have open borders.
And then
if she wants to come on the show, you know, she's able to do that as well.
Representative Jamie Comer also had comments on this. He went on Hey Kentucky this week, and he said that he doesn't see any upside to bringing her here. Mm-hmm. So that was his comment. He did say, however, that he thinks that Republicans are wrong for targeting her in the way that they do because she's really intelligent mm-hmm. and always prepared. And mm-hmm. so he had some positive things to say, but he said he doesn't see any reason to bring her here. And then the final update on Tuesday, Representative John Yarmuth said that AOC is welcome in Kentucky anytime and no apologies needed.
Yeah, good. You can come to Louisville. Absolutely.
So that's where we are.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe she'll come, maybe not.
If she's going to come, she should bring my sister on the plane, I guess, because she also lives, like, she's my sister's neighbor.
Yeah, I was just in that neighborhood.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, you went to the Applebee's in Queens.
No, I didn't go there.
You went by it.
Robert went to the Applebee's in Queens
once.
It's true. I did.
All right. Well, thank you, Jasmine. That's a very interesting story. That's just been hilarious to me for the past couple of weeks. So I would really love it if Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez came to Kentucky. That would be really, really great. So, okay, Jasmine, we've talked a lot about the Brady Industries story on the show several times. Just as a refresher, back in the 2017 General Assembly, the legislature gave the go-ahead to the Bevin administration to use $15 million for an economic development project, which leaders seemed very excited about, but which no one actually knew anything about. We talked actually very briefly about this vote with Representative Atticus Scott when she was on our show a couple of weeks ago, and she said that this is like the vote that she really regrets voting yes for, mm-hmm. because everybody was like, I promise it'll be totally worth it. And she's like, I was a team player. I voted yes on it. And it turned out to be a totally terrible deal. And this is what happened next. So it turned out that the group was Brady Industries, and they wanted to build an aluminum plant in the Ashland area up in northeastern Kentucky. The state made a very unique $15 million direct investment in the project, essentially making the state a part owner of the development, which is very unusual. This is not something that normally happens. Brady itself was founded by Craig Bouchard. His daughter's name is Brady. That's why I named it that. And Bouchard, he has a bad track record when it comes to business ownership. He often takes like very large risks with other people's money, especially public funding, and he rarely delivers on his promises. And this has been something that's happened to him his whole career. In our last update on the project, which was back in September of 2018, Brady was trying to use a platform called Net Capital to raise between $400 and $500 million in what amounted to crowdfunding. Do you remember this story, Jasmine?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of goofy. So the project needed around that amount of money, $400 to $500 million, to even begin construction. And the current plan cost about $1.68 billion to come to full fruition. Eventually, the amount of time that Brady gave itself to raise these funds was lengthened, and I think it was lengthened again, and maybe even three times. It's been several times that they've like said, oh, we'll have a little bit more time to raise money on this platform. And they said in their last time they extended the deadline that they were in discussions with, quote, potential strategic investors. So that was, you know, Craig Bouchard says that, and we're like, yeah, we'll believe it when we see it. But those discussions appeared to have come to fruition in perhaps what I think might be the wildest turn in this story
yet.
Yeah,
this is not what I was expecting this week.
Yeah, no, very strange. So Rusal, a very large aluminum company based in Russia, is joining as the lead investor. Rusal is the largest aluminum company that's not in China. They're putting $200 million into the project, which is a massive amount of money. With their $200 million, they bought a 40% share of the company. So now Bouchard, and all of the amount of the company left after Rusal's investment is only 60% of the company. So the plan that they came out with is that Rusal is going to supply Russian aluminum to the plant in Ashland, where it will be converted to supplies usable in the auto industry, which has a very heavy footprint regionally. You know, there's tons of cars made in Ohio and in Michigan and in Tennessee and even in Kentucky. So there's this aluminum that's coming out of Russia. It's going to be rolled out. That's a rolling mill into aluminum that they can use in the auto industry. Aluminum from Russia, though, has a very substantial tariff on it due to some, you know, election interference that went on in Russia in the 2016 election.
Mm.
So both companies, Rusal and Brady, said that they were willing to pay the tariff to get this done, which I think is pretty funny. Craig Bouchard, who's famous for taking money from the government, is going to now have to pay a tariff to the federal government. So it's kind of backwards of how it usually works. Roussel spent most of the last year under sanctions from the United States government because its leader has significant connections to former Donald Trump campaign manager and convicted felon Paul Manafort. And if you've been following federal politics, you know that like this has been a crazy huge story that's dominated the headlines for like several years. In fact, the leader, whose name is Oleg Deripaska, he remains under U.S. government sanctions and is currently in litigation trying to get them lifted. So this guy who runs this company is under sanctions from the United States government. So essentially, the Commonwealth of Kentucky is now co-owners of an aluminum plant in Ashland with a Russian firm that might be implicated in election interference. So there you go.
Yeah, lots of national politics on the show.
Yeah,
today.
I guess. I mean, they're all connected to, to everything in Kentucky. So, you know, Governor Bevin has been a champion of this project since the beginning. And even with this very odd development, he is leaning very heavily into making this plant a part of his legacy. He was at the New York Stock Exchange on Tuesday, and he was talking about the project saying, quote, "This is a seed that has been in the ground. The germination so often seems invisible to people, but good things have been happening. We're going to see in the days immediately ahead as the first little shoots start to come out of the soil. And it's exciting to see this. And it's a blessing for me to be a small little part of this," unquote. So he seems pretty hyped about Brady Industries getting this massive investment. So you mentioned Jamie Comer's appearance on Hey Kentucky already in your segment, but he also had stuff to say about Brady Industries.
I didn't know we were both pulling from Hey Kentucky.
Well, I mean, there was news that happened there. We had an interview with Jamie Comer. He was extremely skeptical of the Brady Industries deal. He criticized the original investment, saying that taking public money to support a startup was a bad idea. I mean, he said spending money to entice Amazon to come here was one thing.
Right.
But this is a company that has no track record. We have no idea what it is. And giving that money to support a startup was a bad idea. And said, and this was, I think, a revelatory quote. He said that he, quote, wouldn't invest his own money in Brady, unquote. So that kind of tells you what he thinks about the project.
And he's also a pretty big opponent of Bevin.
Absolutely.
In general,
that's
right?
Something that's worth keeping in mind, as he does not like Governor Bevin. Okay, Jasmine, $200 million is a huge amount. And from the standpoint of the project, it's definitely a move that makes the plant look more likely to actually exist at some point in the future. But while $200 million is a lot of money, it's only like 12% of the money that the project is actually supposed to cost. So during the media tour this week, Craig Bouchard talked substantially about the minimal climate impact of the Ashland plant, but he actually didn't talk much at all about how the company was progressing on raising the rest of the money that will be necessary to get this project off the ground. So, you know, we've got a bunch of stories about $15 million from the state of Kentucky and this Net Capital platform that's supposed to be raising money, but we don't know how much money is coming out of it. I saw a tweet from a journalist today that said something between $12 and $15 million. So, you know, $200 million from Roussel, and then maybe $30 million extra dollars, and they need to get to $500 to even get construction off the ground. Yeah. So a long way to go there. So lastly on this story, though, whenever we talk about this story, I think it's really important that we spend some time talking about the backdrop of where it's taking place, which is Ashland, Kentucky. So Ashland, that's home to a massive rolling mill for most of the 20th century. It was called Armco, and later it was called AK Steel. And it just laid off most of its workers in 2015. And they are planning to lay the rest off by the end of this year. In addition, CSX, the rail company, is also closing its shop in nearby Russell in Greenup County, just really close to there. And that's about 100 more people that are going to lose their jobs. You know, this is a region with substantial experience in the manufacturing and logistics industries. And it has managed to maintain a big chunk of that industry until really recently. So, you know, you always heard about the manufacturing decline and how things were going really poorly during most of the 2000s after, you know, NAFTA and a lot of the free trade. And you hear about, like, all these people losing their jobs. But Ashland had a pretty substantial footprint even up until, like, very last year. And that's mostly gone. If this plant can indeed be built, it would really be a boon for this area. You know, just speaking personally, like my dad worked at Armco in the summers, and you know, that's like a place that my great grandfather was. His term was like the company nurse. He used to be the person that went around to make sure people weren't like skipping out on work. And of course, my wife, Kelsey, also is from the Ashland area. And she thought she was going to scoop me on this story. So she sent me along this post from LinkedIn. That post from LinkedIn was actually more widely shared in her Facebook network than any of the other journalism about this, which stretched as far as like CNN and Forbes and national publications talking about this. But this LinkedIn post from this Ashland entrepreneur, which in my opinion was the most optimistic and the least skeptical of the writing that I've seen about this project. And I took away from that experience that it's pretty clear that the area really wants this project to be successful. And even with all this insanity around there, like getting 600 jobs in for doing something in advanced manufacturing would be good for Ashland.
Right. And I think that they're also preparing for it in terms of like training and classes and things like that. Like I know that they want skilled workers and they have classes that they can take to prepare them for these jobs. And they really want and need this.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that they are maybe more optimistic than some others.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. It would be great for their area. So even though there's a lot of kind of sketchy and weird parts about this project, you know, we still hope for its success or the success of something going there in advanced manufacturing. Okay, Jasmine, tell us what we need to know about school boards.
Okay. So Skokie, the Supreme Court of Kentucky, heard oral arguments in another Bashir versus Bevin case last Friday. And this one is about school boards. And we've talked about this suit before. This is one about Bevin's school board reorganization from the summer of 2017 while the legislature was not in session. So this came via executive order, and it had the appointment of 4 non-voting charter school advisors to the Kentucky Board of Education. And then there was also a replacement of boards that dealt with certifying teachers and establishing curriculum standards and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
This lawsuit, like the other board lawsuits, is about separation of powers. You know, can the executive essentially make law and then just have the legislature approve of it 9 months later?
Hmm.
We talked about this when the lower court ruled. So Judge Wingate of Franklin Circuit Court ruled that most of it was okay. He held that Bevin had the authority to reorganize school boards, but that he could not restructure a board that dealt with teacher disciplinary action.
Okay.
So the problem wasn't that he reorganized it. It's that he tried to change the board's procedures and appeal process, which is outside the authority that's been delegated to him by the legislature.
So he's basically allowed to like say who's on the board, but he can't set the policy that those people are supposed to.
Right. Yeah. And what he's allowed to do comes from the KRS. So there are provisions in the Kentucky Revised Statutes that allow the executive to reorganize certain boards and do certain things. But what he did with this board, the Educational Professional Standards Board, was more than that. It was outside his delegated authority. So he can do what's delegated to him by the legislature, and this part of it was not.
Mm-hmm.
So they said that that part was unconstitutional. Bashir appealed, and that's the appeal was what was heard last Friday. They had oral arguments. But an interesting part about this is after he issued these orders in 2017, the legislature did not pass them in the next session. So he just reissued them with some changes.
Mm-hmm.
The attorney general used this to argue that he is trying to legislate and circumvent the legislative process because he just keeps issuing new executive orders and not having them passed by the General Assembly the following session.
So essentially he issued this and the legislature should have approved it, and that probably would have been fine. But the legislature, in fact, did not approve it. And so the governor issued the same thing over again and said it was new, but just made some small changes.
Right. But that wasn't what this specific suit is about. The reorganization in 2017.
Right.
Bashir is just using that as an argument to say
okay. He's
violating separation of powers because look what he's done now. He's clearly trying to legislate. So that I think that's just part of his argument as to why this is unconstitutional.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. So it's just additional evidence about why the 2017 reorganization wasn't legit.
Right.
Okay. That makes sense. So we'll be paying attention. It's in front of Skokie. We'll see what the decision is soon.
Mm-hmm.
All right, before we have our interview with Representative Meeks, we have some quick hits.
A lot of quick hits.
Yeah, we do. There's a lot of stuff that's happened. So Rocky Adkins is on the air. The gubernatorial candidate and leader of House Democrats issued his first commercial. It has him playing the guitar, playing basketball, and taking shots at Matt Bevin. It's a nice 30-second intro that I think is pretty true to the themes he's tried to highlight during the campaign so far, which are like, Yeah, so it's good. You should check it out if you want to see what his commercial looks like and listen to some bluegrass music. So there you go. Another thing, our partners over at Forward Kentucky have released a pretty amazing legislative scorecard. It took a ton of work, but Bruce Maples and his team put together something that evaluates legislators based on their votes using a combination of both qualitative and quantitative information. I think it's really worth your time to check out. And I mean, if you're interested in the legislature and interested in how people voted on lots of different issues, it is really cool. And I really recommend you go look at it. Okay, another thing, more federal politics. Jim Gray, former mayor of Lexington, has waded into presidential politics by endorsing Pete Buttigieg for president. Both men are gay former mayors in cities and states that border one another. So that's, you know, makes sense, I guess.
Yeah.
Gray says that he got to know Mayor Pete, as he's known, when they both served as mayor. And he said that Buttigieg was the real deal. So there you go.
An early endorsement.
Yeah. I did not see this coming, but it makes a lot of sense when you think about it. So.
Yeah.
Jasmine, Hillbilly Days was last weekend in Pikeville. Did you see any of the videos from Hillbilly Days?
No, I haven't watched any of them yet.
They were pretty good. There were a lot of folks that gave speeches. Rocky Adkins gave a speech that was pretty good. Josh Mers, I mean, in my opinion, and there were a lot of good speakers, but I thought Josh's speech was really great. Kelsey Hayes Coutts gave a speech, and those were most of the ones I saw recorded. They also have really good social media teams, so maybe that's why I saw
that,
them.
Yeah, yeah, that too.
Yeah. So Matt Bevin spoke as well. His social media team was not the one posting the video, though. It didn't go so well. Nobody could really hear what he was saying because he was being booed so loud.
I did see that.
Yeah, so that's pretty funny. So, yeah, same day as Thunder, so not great for Louisvillians, but yeah, it was Hillbilly Days last weekend. Jasmine, several weeks ago, we talked about Google Fiber leaving Louisville and leaving behind a bunch of messed up roads with epoxy like all over them, like coming out of the roads. That's happening in the neighborhood I live in. I lived in one of the neighborhoods where Google Fiber happened, but it didn't come to my house. So I both have to live with the crappy roads and no Google Fiber. But apparently it's much, much worse in the Portland neighborhood mm-hmm. than even it is in the Highlands. So this week, Google agreed to pay the city about a little bit less than $4 million to fix the road. So
there's some consolation,
yeah,
I guess.
Not great. The whole process has been really horrible, but at least that's some consolation. Exactly. Attorney General and gubernatorial candidate Andy Beshear has threatened to sue Matt Bevin and the Labor Cabinet if they do not rescind their subpoenas for the names of teachers who participated in the sick outs this year. That we talked a little bit about that last week when you weren't here. But yeah, the Labor Cabinet basically also issued subpoenas and seemed like they were going to try to punish some of these teachers. And Andy Beshear is saying, not under my watch, or I'll do my best to stop it at least. So. And lastly, this just happened today, but United States Education Secretary Betsy DeVos visited Kentucky on April 17th, which is the day that we're recording this. And she spoke out in favor of so-called school choice and other privatization schemes for education at an event billed as a, quote, education roundtable, unquote. So she was with a friendly crowd, which did not include any teachers or superintendents. And a journalist asked why an education roundtable didn't include any educators. Governor Bevin responded by saying, quote, the people here care about the kids. Every single person that sat around this table cares about the children, not about funding, not about territory, not about power, not about politics. So that is absolutely a slight at teachers.
Teachers definitely do it for the power, not the kids.
And the
right?
funding, right? Yeah, because you become a teacher in order to make a ton of money. That's how that goes. Everybody knows that. So that's sarcasm, guys. That was not a great thing to say. Governor Bevin does not like teachers. We can say that for sure. All right. Well, I'm really excited to share our interview with Representative Reginald Meeks, and that is coming up right now.
Representative Reginald Meeks is a state representative for the 42nd District in Louisville, which runs east to west from Louisville's West End to the Clifton neighborhood in northeast Louisville. Representative Meeks has served in the state legislature since 2000 and was an alderman in Louisville between 1982 and 2000. Representative Meeks worked at the University of Louisville before retiring from that job in 2012. Representative Meeks, welcome to My Old Kentucky Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm enjoying being here with you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing this. So, you know, there's a lot of campaign literature when people are running for office that talks about, you know, my opponent is a career politician. And, you know, you're somebody that spent, you know, 30 years of your life, which is a good part of your life, and you've dedicated it to public service. So tell us, like, what it's really like to make those type of sacrifices, you know, help out your community.
You know, I really appreciate that question because all too often people are so quick to say, you're just a whatever. And public service is something that, first of all, you have to be committed to. It takes a great deal of dedication and commitment. It takes a great deal of sacrifice. You know, I can look back over my years, both here in Louisville and in Frankfort, and I can just run off a litany of sacrifices that get made, but you really don't think about that. Mm-hmm. When you're working on a project, you've got people that are dependent upon you to be their voice, your personal concern is the first thing that gets sacrificed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I really don't think about the sacrifice. I much rather focus on the potential. Mm-hmm. And the responsibility.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of those same sorts of people that are concerned with, like, career politicians or whatever, they also are usually the type of people that support the idea of term limits. So if you don't mind to tell us a little bit what you think about the idea of term limits and also kind of what you would think would be lost in the legislature if we did institute that sort of a system.
Sure. Term limits is an interesting concept, because if you think about it, every 2 years that we run for office, people that you represent have the opportunity to kick you to the curb.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I've always said to myself from the very beginning, I'm going to know when it's time for me to step off,
mm-hmm.
Rather than depending upon someone else to say, you're out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that kind of keeps me grounded.
Mm-hmm.
I never make too much of these positions that I've been able to hold. Because, you know, these are not my seats.
Mm-hmm.
These are seats that I've earned. These are seats that I have accepted the responsibility to represent, mm-hmm. the people of the, whether it's the 11th Ward when I was here in Louisville, or the 42nd District, mm-hmm. in Frankfort. So I try to keep myself grounded.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when I come home, the people that I represent keep me grounded.
Absolutely.
I mean, these are people who have seen me grown up from a kid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so they have no problem telling me when I'm off base.
Mm. Well, that's nice to have, I guess.
Yeah, it really is.
So when you entered the legislature, the Democrats had more than 60 seats and controlled the governor's office as well. But now the tables have totally turned, with Republicans controlling more than 60 seats and the governorship. So after Democrats lost the majority, many long-term legislators decided to retire. Why did you decide to keep running?
I still have work to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I still have responsibilities to live up to. Mm-hmm. And I still have people who I care about who are dependent upon me to be there for them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's you know, this is not about party.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that all too often we narrow our view to just what, mm-hmm. is important to the party, and I try to stay away from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and you know, not to mention that, you know, you may have been in the majority party, but you know, you've always kind of been a minority legislator. You know what I mean? Your view of the Democratic Party hasn't always been in the majority, even when the Democrats themselves might have been
absolutely.
In the majority. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about this past legislative session. You were the chief sponsor of 10 bills, which were mostly about civil rights, voting rights, and hate crimes, and they didn't get a vote in committee. Is that what you expected? And as someone with a lot more perspective on the legislative process than we have, can you tell us what we should learn from the lack of progress with progressive bills this year?
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot to unpack there. First of all, let me just say to you that what happened to my bills and every other legislator of color,
mm-hmm.
their bills, is that we didn't even get them heard,
mm-hmm. right.
in committee, much less voted on, brought to the floor, discussed, mm-hmm. and have the opportunity for the entire House, mm-hmm. to vote on it. And that's a sad state of affairs when a significant number of legislators representing a significant percentage of the population, with the vast local and state experience that we have and perspective that we have, and the important perspective of diversity, if you want to say, mm-hmm. that, we didn't even get a chance to have our bills heard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I brought that to House Republican leadership this year, and they seemed, I take them at their word, they seemed to be surprised,
mm-hmm.
that they did not know
really?
that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that this year, we have had a couple, I'll say a few, a few of our bills heard.
Yeah, Charles Booker has told us that him and George Brown's bill about, a voter restoration rights, I think, got at least a hearing, but still not a vote.
Not a vote. Yeah. We did get a hearing, which, you know, if you think here in Kentucky, what we love to live in the past, that is progress.
Right, right.
But it's a hell of a little progress.
Right. I mean, it had to go backwards before it even got this far. Exactly. It used to pass the House every year, no problem. And now, you know, right.
So I think the message that I hope our voters out there, and I don't care if you're Democrat, if you got a D behind your name or an R behind your name, your vote or your lack of vote has consequences. Mm-hmm. One of the consequences is that important legislation that you have told us you want to see is not even allowed to be heard in committee, much less have a vote on it. So we have to rededicate ourselves. You know, it's more than just showing up on election day. It's more than just showing up on election day. And that is important. But that's not the be all and the end all. The dirty, hard work that needs to be done on the street, we all have to buy into it and not depend on just your elected officials or just your party local workers. That's a responsibility that each of us should carry with us. And if we do that, then we can make some difference. We can make a difference and we can have some progress that we are lacking now.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking back at the whole course of your time in the legislature, what are some pieces of legislation that you've worked on in your career that you're the most proud of?
You know, it's hard to be proud of much of anything. I mean, you know, I'm happy that I was here present and accounted for to present these bills. But we present bills all day long. If they don't go anywhere, if they don't even get a hearing, much less a vote, what have we done? You know, and I'm not one for staying in the past. And unfortunately, that sometimes is where our ethos is here in Kentucky.
Right.
But I'm proud to have been there representing the 42nd District, representing Jefferson County, and representing our Democrat Party. And, you know, however you look at that, that you can't take that away.
Sure. No, you certainly can't. You certainly can't. And the presence is certainly noticed by people like us. So that's
and that's why your presence on the air, your presence sharing the information that we have to share from the community, I mean from Frankfort, you're sharing it with the community is so important. And I hope each and every one of you all who are listening to this podcast will share the information that you hear, will share the fact that this podcast is available for all Kentuckians to see.
Yes, please do that. Absolutely. So since the legislature and the House kind of changed hands in 2016, to us it kind of seems a little bit like the Democratic caucus went through a little bit of a transformation.
I'll say.
So the caucus seems significantly more liberal and outspoken on issues about which, you know, Democrats in Kentucky have typically remained pretty silent. Are we totally off base with that, or do you sense that as well?
No, you're not totally off base. I think that we got some new members, some younger members, younger from the standpoint of, you know, dealing in the seats that we sit. We you know, people who didn't necessarily have office before aren't necessarily so embedded with the Democrat Party that they keep their eyes closed when the party says, keep your eyes closed.
Right.
We have some outstanding new legislators, and that's very important. And we lost some legislators who, I won't say that they were along for the ride, but who were not as progressive.
Sure.
As I think many of us believe our party must be if we're going to continue to make progress in the Commonwealth of Kentucky.
Yeah, and you know, 2016, things have changed a little bit for you as well, maybe?
Yeah.
And one of the things that people have talked to us a little bit about over the past several years is kind of the importance of carpools, getting to Frankfort and getting back and forth, and kind of like what it's like to spend that much time with people in the car. And there's a couple of these that are like legendary in terms of like people kind of how they share back and forth. You know, you're laughing here. Can you share with us a little bit about what it's like for you getting back and forth and what impact that has on you as a legislator?
Well, it's, you know, it's it's very intimate time mm-hmm. with whoever you're sharing the carpool with. Mm-hmm. The two characters that I happen to have the honor of sharing a carpool with is Representative Attica Scott uh-huh. and Representative Charles Booker.
Yeah. They're friends of ours. We know them.
Yeah, we just talked to them recently.
Yeah.
They are, I'll say this, they are two very intense individuals. Mm-hmm. They are two very experienced and knowledgeable individuals. And I simply drive and listen. You know, they have a perspective that is broad and deep. Mm-hmm. And it helps sustain me. Mm-hmm. And I'm really honored to be their driver.
well, I mean, has that spending that time, because those are pretty new people to the legislature, and yes, you've spent a lot longer there. Do you feel like you've become any different since spending that time with those people who are a little bit different than maybe the people in those seats before?
I think I am. Uh-huh. I think that I am much more likely now to be more methodical mm-hmm. about some of my thinking. Mm-hmm. I think that I'm now, I'd like to think more serious, mm-hmm. Looking for depth mm-hmm. and breadth on issues, and their perspective certainly helps me to find that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I appreciate them very, very much.
Mm-hmm. So in addition to being one of the state's 8 black legislators, you're also the only legislator in Kentucky with Native American heritage.
You all have done your homework.
Yeah.
Issues of identity and representation, I'm sure, are super important to you. So tell us a little bit how your heritage influences your work and ways in which Kentucky could serve its Native American population better.
Thank you very much for that question. I've been very honored to have been able to share my personal history in my work. When I was a city alderman, we worked with the Native American community. You might remember a situation that occurred over in Union County. This would have been probably 87, maybe.
Jasmine wasn't born yet, and I think I might have been one, so yeah.
Oh, now you're going to talk about it. Right. But what happened was that there was a farm there in Union County, the Slack Farm, mm-hmm. and it was owned by a family that had owned it for years and years and years, and they knew that there were Native sites on their property, but they never attempted to exploit that in any way. They used the land as they normally would. They plowed the fields, planted corn, and they would find items, mm-hmm. Arrowheads and pieces of pottery, but it was not something that they exploited in mm-hmm. any way. Well, when the property changed hands, the new owners found that the people wanted to come on their property to dig for what they could find, mm-hmm. and they charged a fee, were paid a fee, and allowed these who are called pothole diggers, mm-hmm. people who come in and dig grave sites, burial sites, and they take funerary property, personal items, and even persons, mm-hmm. skulls, mm-hmm. remains, bits and pieces of charred material, clothing, mm-hmm. beadwork, and they would take it and they sell it. Mm-hmm. They trade it on the open market. Mm-hmm. Just desecration with a capital D. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, pretty soon the people in Union County began talking about it. Word got out. And there was a state trooper who knew that this was wrong and who conducted some investigations, found out who was involved, and brought this forward. Mm-hmm. And we were able to work with him and support him in his efforts to bring about a focus from the legislature on these issues. Mm-hmm. And I've continued that work, mm-hmm. and have been part of the Native American Heritage Commission, mm-hmm. up until this year. Your governor decided I didn't need to be on it.
Oh, wow.
No, that's fine. Mm. So anyway, So we were able to change not just state law, but we worked closely with people who were looking at federal law. Mm-hmm. And federal law in this area was changed. It was just a minor mm-hmm. misdemeanor and is now felony.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
All right. So thank you for sharing that. I think that you bring a really unique perspective. And since you're the only one, we haven't talked to anybody else about issues like that before. But last but not least, do you have any thoughts about the primary for statewide races that will be held next month?
Oh, a lot of thought about it. I'm thinking that voters of Kentucky have a chance to start the process mm-hmm. for reclaiming Kentucky. We have folks coming in from out of state thinking that they know what's best for us. Mm-hmm. And I'll leave that as it is. But we have to be the change that we want to see. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that there is a gentleman running for agriculture commissioner. Mm-hmm. His name is Joe Trigg. Mm-hmm. He's from down around Glasgow,
South Central Kentucky.
Yeah, uh-huh. He comes from a farming family. Mm-hmm. He has been very successful in various endeavors that mm-hmm. he has undertaken. He will make a fantastic mm-hmm. agriculture commissioner, Joe Trigg.
Okay.
And I hope that people will not just sit back and let bygones be bygones and just kind of go along with the program. He is a Democrat. Uh-huh. I will say that, if that makes a difference. To me, it doesn't yeah. necessarily. But he is a wonderful gentleman, and mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to working with him. And he's got a very forward-thinking perspective about where farming and agriculture needs to go in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And it is a major, major industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, sure. Certainly.
In the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
In terms of other folks running for office, I just want to ensure that we don't have any weak candidates mm-hmm. running for major positions. Mm-hmm. That I think we tripped over ourselves in the past
mm-hmm. yeah.
by having folk putting people out there just because they had a certain name
sure.
presence. Mm-hmm. The name does not win elections.
Sure, we learned that lesson.
We learned that lesson. Yeah. We better learn that
yeah,
lesson.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I'm really very pleased and very proud and honored to be Thanks. Here and hope to be able to come back.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Jasmine, I did the outro last week and I did a terrible job. So Jasmine, how can people get in touch with us?
They can find us on Twitter and Instagram at @myoldkypod. They can like our Facebook page. We have a newsletter that comes out every week that you can subscribe to at forwardky.com/email. And you can also check out the legislator scorecard at forwardky.com as well. We have a Patreon page where you can sponsor us for as little as $1 a month and help support what we do every week to release this podcast to you. And that's at patreon.com/myoldkentuckypodcast. And of course, you can find our show on the podcasting app of your choice.
Thank you, everybody. And we will see you soon.